Well, good afternoon. This is Chair Rena Moran, pursuant to House Rule 10.01. I call this remote meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee for March the 1st, 2022 to order. Ms. Sparkman, please take the roll for attendance.
Chair Moran.
Can't hear you. Oh, that was me. That was me. My volume was down. Present.
Okay, Moran, present. Vice Chair Olson?
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Garofalo? Representative Garofalo? Representative Albright?
Albright, present.
Representative Becker Finn, excused. Representative Bernardi?
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative Eklund?
Present.
Eklund, present. Representative Hansen?
Present.
Hansen, present. Representative Hassan? Representative Hertas?
Hertas, present.
Representative Hornstein?
Hornstein, present.
Representative Johnson?
Present.
Johnson, present. Representative Cresha? Representative Liebling?
Liebling, present.
Representative Lilly?
Lilly, present.
Representative Mariani? Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, present.
Representative Miller, excused. Representative Nash?
Nash, present.
Representative Nelson?
Nelson, present.
Representative Noor?
Noor, present.
Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, present.
Representative Pulaski?
Pulaski, present.
Representative Petersburg?
Petersburg, present.
Representative Pinto?
Present.
Pinto, present. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, present.
Representative Schultz?
Schultz, present.
Representative Scott? Representative Sundin?
Present.
Representative Garofalo?
Garofalo, present.
Representative Hassan? Representative Mariani? Representative Scott? That concludes the roll. There is a quorum present.
Great. So a quorum is present. The next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from my hearing on yesterday, February the 28th. The minutes were included in the hearing documents emailed to you by committee staff. Are there any questions or corrections on the minutes? If not, the chair would like to entertain a motion to approve.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Olson moves approval of the minutes for February the 28th, 2022. Please unmute briefly for a voice vote. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Remember, this extra meeting was called to give our members the opportunity to be briefed by MMB on the February forecast. So Commissioner Showalters, Dr. Columbakidis, and the State Budget Director, Ming. Welcome to the committee. Thank you for your work on the forecast and providing us with this briefing. Members, we have an hour blocked for this hearing, but understand one of the MMB staff has another commitment at 5:30. So let's get through the presentation and then take questions. Commissioner, please state your name for the record and begin.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Moran. Thank you, members. I appreciate the chance to brief you this afternoon, early evening. My name, for the record, is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget. And as the Chair mentioned, Dr. Laura Collin-Bakitis is here to present the economy and the revenue side of the story, and State Budget Director Anna Mengi is here to talk about the budget and some of the other spending side of the budget picture. Today, we'll give you the February forecast and the economic outlook. All of this information, as you mentioned on the press conference and other briefings, is based upon, you know, the state's budget performance of, and particularly on the U.S. economic data that we get from our consultants at IHS Market. So the top line that we tweeted out yesterday, late yesterday morning, was that this forecast anticipates an additional $1.5 billion improvement. The forecast that this improvement is on top of already a significant surplus. And so, you know, the state's budget is in a strong position and getting stronger. That said, you know, the uncertainty that has swirled around forecasts for the last couple of years continues unabated. You know, before COVID-19, 2 years ago, our February forecast was pretty sleepy affair, if I may say so. Now, most of the change was updated information from the end of the calendar year. Since then, however, we've seen an increased volatility with news and events and happening that are hard to anticipate, and more news happening between that November and February timeline than we would have expected in the past. This update is includes that. The technical part of looking at where we're at is good news. An additional $1.5 billion in one-time money for the budget is a significant improvement. Combined with the changes in the last forecast, our surplus is more than $9 billion. But that uncertainty that I sort of alluded to hasn't stopped. Even as we were putting together the final numbers, our national forecasters had gave us, you know, their information. And even as we were putting together our final numbers, we realized that the terrible news of Russia invading Ukraine had broken out. That wasn't part of our national economic forecast. And so that is a significant concern, and we can talk about that as we go through the presentation. So with that, I'm gonna just go into the key top notes here in this slide. You sort of see the key points. Total improvement is about $1.5 billion in the current biennium. Mostly one time, though, there is some improvement in the biennium. The projected balance for the current biennium is $9.3 billion. The factors that drove this update are very similar to what we talked about in November. And that said, there are significant factors that we're going to talk about as risks in this forecast, most in particularly inflation and what's going to be happening with it, and global conflict, particularly the Russian invasion of Ukraine. The next slide just gives you a little bit of the information in a numbers form. What you see here is at the top, the beginning balance that we're starting the biennium, that the revenues have gone from a little over $56 billion to a little over $57 billion, an improvement of $1.3 billion in this forecast. As I mentioned before, higher income, consumer spending, and corporate profits have led to these marginal improvements in the revenues. The spending side also contributes to this bottom line. What you're seeing here is a reduced spending of $270 million. So that adds to the resources, adds to the bottom line, and contributes to the $1.5 billion improvement in the forecast. Those changes, our state budget director will walk through, but they're primarily in the areas of education and health and human services. So unlike the November forecast, there isn't a change in the reserves. So you see the budget reserve continues on intact. The cash flow account continues on intact. The stadium reserve does go up by $15 million. That, as you may remember, is really tied to, it's a dedicated account, putting those charitable gaming receipts into that account for use in paying off the stadium at a later date. So that's kind of the top line view. As always, you know, our budget and economic outlook has a lot of different pieces that we're going to want to walk through. And I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Collin-Bakitis to walk through the changes in the U.S. and Minnesota economy. Dr. Collin-Bakitis.
Thank you, Commissioner Showalter. Madam Chair, would you like me to proceed?
Yes, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm, for the record, I'm Laura Kalimbakidis, Minnesota State Economist. As usual, I'm going to start with the Minnesota, the U.S. economic outlook and how it's changed since November. I'll talk a bit about Minnesota's labor market, and then I'll turn to details of our new revenue forecast. The U.S. economy continues to recover from the two-month recession that was triggered by the outbreak of COVID-19 in the spring of 2020. In December of 21, the U.S. unemployment rate had fallen to 3.9%, and total employment had recovered to 97.8% of pre-pandemic level, and unemployment benefit claims had receded to 2019 levels. Home values, financial asset values, corporate profits, those have all risen. The economy is forecast, the U.S. economy is forecast to recover to its pre-pandemic employment levels this year. And economic growth is forecast to continue. Nevertheless, as you heard from Commissioner Showalter, significant challenges to the U.S. economic outlook remain. So some of these are held over from the November forecast. For instance, inflation, supply chain disruptions, labor force participation, the path of the pandemic, those are all things that we talked about in November. But on top of all of that, we now have risks associated with Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the subsequent sanctions on Russia. So if we move to my first chart, in this chart, we're showing the forecast by IHS for annual growth in US real GDP. As usual, the gray bars show IHS's November forecast and the blue bars show their current forecast of February 22, which is the one that informed our forecast. IHS estimates that US real GDP grew 5.7% last year. That's faster than the 5.5% they estimated in November. In addition, the winter Omicron wave of COVID-19 slowed consumer spending on services over the winter, and that slowed growth at the beginning of this year. So IHS has now forecast real GDP to increase 3.7% in 22. That's down from 4.3% in their November outlook. Growth is then expected to further decelerate to 2.7% next year. That's down from 2.9% in their November outlook. And growth forecasts for 24 and 25 are each a tenth of a point lower than what they had been in November. The forecast for some underlying important economic variables have been raised since November. Forecasts for nominal consumer spending, wage and salary income, and corporate profits, these are all variables that include the effect of inflation and influence tax revenues. These all have growth rates that are higher than what we had in November. The next chart, we'll talk about inflation. Price inflation exceeded expectations in 21 as demand recovered faster in some capacity constrained sectors than supply could match. In December of last year, the consumer price index rose 7.1% over December of 2020. So it's 12 months apart, December over December. This brought annual inflation, so 7.1% at the end of last year, brought annual inflation for 21 to 4.7%. That's the highest annual reading since 1990, and above IHS's November forecast of 4.5%. IHS, or higher and more widespread inflation last year, raises expectations for price inflation this year. For 22, IHS now forecasts 4.5% inflation compared to 3.3% in November. Now, you can see that the forecast for inflation declines as we get into 23 and beyond. IHS does expect inflation to be eased by the gradual resolution of supply chain issues and rising U.S. labor force participation. They also assume that households and businesses are confident in the Fed's ability to control inflation with monetary policy. So they assume that we think that monetary policy will be effective. Consequently, IHS expects price increases to slow later this year, and they forecast CPI inflation of 1.9% in 23 and 2.1% in 24 and 25. But as you just heard, the current IHS outlook was prepared early in February and doesn't reflect the risks to energy prices, agricultural commodity prices, supply chain disruptions, overall price inflation, and financial market volatility arising from Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the sanctions against Russia. In their February outlook, IHS expects the Federal Reserve to begin taking action to raise the federal funds interest rate in March of this year. That's a full year earlier than what they assumed in November. But more persistent or higher inflation could lead to a higher magnitude of Fed action and earlier Fed action although we're already in March, so there's a lot of time for things to happen earlier. And that could result in slower economic growth than is assumed in this forecast. In the next chart, the height of the bars shows annual growth in US total wage and salary income. So this value is the sum of all the payrolls of all the employers in the United States and how fast that grows. That number can grow if more people are working or if wages per worker are going up or if both of those things are happening. It is not percentage increase in wages per worker. So it's not a number that you can directly compare to inflation. In any event, IHS expects, it's not a number that you can directly compare to inflation in looking at the percentages to percentages, but the value can be boosted by inflation because it is nominal wages, not real wages. And IHS expects a tightening of the labor market, meaning we now have low unemployment and high demand for workers nationwide. IHS expects that to drive up wage and salary income. They now estimate that wage income grew 9.1% last year. That's higher than the 8% they forecast in November. And then they forecast an acceleration to 9.4% this year, up from their prior forecast of 7.9%. Then wage and salary income growth decelerates in 23, and the value for that has been revised downward an average of 0.3 percentage points for each year from 23 through 25. The next chart shows levels or dollar values. This is not a growth rate this time. Dollar values of US corporate profits, which continue to exceed expectations. The solid line shows IHS's February outlook and the dashed line shows what they expected in November. Corporate profits are the main factor determining Minnesota's corporate tax revenues. And those corporate profits were unexpectedly strong during the second half of last year. And that drove higher than expected corporate tax receipts so far in fiscal year 22. In the February outlook, corporate profits are expected to exceed the November forecast through 25. Moving to Minnesota's labor market, this chart shows the official unemployment rates for Minnesota and the US, where Minnesota is the dark line and the US is the light line. You can see those sharp spikes in unemployment in 2020 when Minnesota's unemployment rate reached 11.3%. But as of December of 21, the state's unemployment rate fell to 3.1%. That's 0.9 percentage points below the US unemployment rate and the 12th lowest among US states. But as we've talked about before, the unemployment rate does not capture the effect of Minnesotans who have left the labor force, including for retirements. We know that the largest group of people who left the labor force during the pandemic were of retirement age, but including retirements and people staying home to take care of children. Since the onset of the pandemic, Minnesota's labor force has fallen by 87,000. As of December, our labor force participation rate was 67.7%. That's 2.5 percentage points lower than in February of 20, but it's 5.8 percentage points higher than the US rate. And it's the sixth highest among US states. So the relationship between the US labor force participation rate in Minnesota's, which is that Minnesota's is higher, that persists. As with the US forecast, we expect low unemployment and a high demand for workers to drive up total wage and salary income in the state. The next chart is a different view of the labor market, and it shows total employment in Minnesota. So this is levels, so it's the number of workers in jobs in the state. And we're just showing the tail end, so we're showing from 2008, we're just showing the upper part of the full graph. It shows the steady job growth since the recession of 2007-08, and then it shows the big loss of jobs in the spring of 20, when we lost 416,000 jobs. And since then, state employers have added jobs in most months. Through December of last year, 307,000 of the jobs originally lost have been recovered. Minnesota employment is now 109,000, or 3.6% lower than in February of 20. The US is 2.2% below its pre-pandemic peak. So Minnesota's employment recovery is lagging the US. I'll turn to the revenue forecast next. The first column shows our current forecast for fiscal years 22 and 23, and the second column shows the forecast change. Since November, general fund receipts, actual receipts, have exceeded our November forecast. Those higher tax receipts to date in fiscal year 22 and the improved outlook for income, for consumer spending, and for profits raised the forecast for the current biennium. It's actually the same story we had in November. Higher receipts to date, and higher forecasts for income, consumer spending, and profits. That's what raised the forecast in November. That's what's doing it again now. Total general fund revenues for the current biennium are now forecast to be $1.252 billion more than the November forecast. We have raised the forecast for all major tax types. Individual income tax receipts are now forecast to be $498 million more than the prior forecast. Those changes are in the biennium are front-loaded. 70% of those that increase occurs in the current fiscal year. Higher growth in wage and non-wage income, especially business income and capital gains and realizations in 21, that activity that happened in 21, those raised the income tax forecast for the remainder of the biennium. Sales tax revenue is now forecast to be $212 million more than the prior forecast. The increased forecast is consistent with that increased forecast for consumer spending that I mentioned, nominal consumer spending that I mentioned earlier, because the sales tax is levied on nominal sales. And it's also due to higher than expected collections so far this fiscal year. And the corporate tax, it's the same story. So we've raised the forecast by $324 million. That's based on that higher forecast for corporate profits and higher collections so far this fiscal year. I'll finish by reiterating some of the risks to this forecast. So that assumption that's embedded in this forecast that inflation settles back into the 2% range depends on the resolution of supply chain blockages, higher labor force participation, and on the effectiveness of monetary policy to control inflation. However, bringing down inflation is made more challenging by the surge in energy prices following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And higher energy prices and the higher commodity prices that are resulting from that war as well drive up general price levels because those are inputs into the production and distribution of consumer goods. Higher and more persistent inflation, as I said, can lead to a higher magnitude of action by the Fed, which can slow real GDP growth below what we have in this outlook. As it has for the past 2 years, the economic forecast continues to depend on the path of the pandemic, including the impact of any newly emerging coronavirus variants or treatments. And then finally, just the warning that we usually give you that with 16 months remaining until the end of this biennium, even small changes in assumed growth rates in particularly important revenue sources or income sources like wages, capital gains realizations, corporate profits, even small changes in those things can generate large changes in the outlook for this biennium and the next. I'm happy to now turn it over to State Budget Director Anna Mingi.
State Director Ming, introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you. I'm Anna Mingi, State Budget Director with Minnesota Management and Budget. I am here to walk us through the changes on the spending side of the budget forecast. And if we move to the next slide, this is a table that reflects changes in general fund spending in our current biennium, 2022 through 23. Overall, spending changes are relatively small. They're about 0.5% lower this biennium than the November forecast. The largest change is in E-12 education, which is the largest part of the state budget, of the general fund budget, where we are reflecting $158 million in lower forecast spending than November projections. That's a 0.8% reduction. This change is due to several dynamics. First, the forecast reflects lower pupils than the November forecast. And this is in both the previous school year, as we now have complete data for the 2020-21 school year, as well as in the current school year and going forward. The forecast also incorporates lower spending for special education transportation. And this program forecast costs are lower because our actual costs were lower in the last school year as more special education students relied on remote or distance learning. And finally, in the education space, the forecast reflects lower payments for compensatory aid, as a result of fewer applications for free and reduced price school lunch. And this is also primarily due to pandemic-related federal support for nutrition programs that provided free meals to students without the need to apply. But compensatory aid levels are anticipated to return to more normal projections in future years. The next line, health and human services spending, we're also forecasting slightly lower spending than the November forecast. HHS is forecast to be $108 million, or about 0.7%, lower than previous estimates. The largest driver here is additional federal Medicaid funding as a result of the extension of the federal public health emergency. As this committee is aware, the federal government passed a law 2 years ago that provides a state's a 6.2% bump, a 6.2 percentage point bump in our federal matching rate for Medicaid for quarters in which there's a federal public health emergency relating to COVID-19. So in January of this year, the federal government extended the public health emergency from January to April of 2022. And this extension allows us to capture an additional quarter of federal match, which is estimated to bring the state $143 million in additional federal contributions to Medicaid. However, some of those savings are offset by higher costs to the state due to federal requirements that we maintain continuous coverage for Medicaid enrollees. So on net, the extension of the public health emergency results in a savings of about $65 million to the general fund. Another notable change in the health and human services space is $40 million in lower forecast spending due to lower use of the state's child care assistance program as a result of the pandemic. Caseloads are expected to return to pre-pandemic levels by the end of fiscal year 2023. Spending for property tax aids and credits is expected to be $15 million, or about 0.4% lower than previous estimates, which is the result of fewer homestead credit refunds and renters' property tax refunds in the current year. Projected debt service costs are relatively unchanged from November, and all other areas of the state budget combined had $12 million in higher spending compared to the November forecast. So in the current biennium, on total, spending is forecast to be $270 million lower than November estimates, but the bulk of these changes are one time and don't continue into the planning years. With that, I'll turn it over to Commissioner Showalter.
Okay, Commissioner Showalter. Commissioner? Okay, is the commissioner still available?
Madam Chair, we'll work on sending him a text message, but I can also speak to this slide.
Okay, please move forward.
Thank you. So this, this chart shows us the change in the forecast moving into the planning years, the 2024-25 biennium. And as you can see, we have structural balance, meaning our revenues exceed our expenditures in both the current biennium and the next. In the 2024-25 biennium, we're projecting structural balance of $6.3 billion. This is about roughly $300 million improvement from the November forecast. You know, we are projecting revenues to grow on average 2.8% annually and spending to grow 2.5% on average annually. We also always include, as a point of reference for policymakers, the value of inflation in the planning years. And our estimate with this forecast is that the value of inflation applied to the tails is $1.1 billion. You'll notice we don't include an estimate of inflation for the current biennium. This, because we have an enacted budget for 2022-23, We don't provide an estimate of inflation, but obviously the inflation that's being reflected in parts of the budget forecast has the potential to impact agency budgets. So, Madam Chair, I know Commissioner Showalter is working on rejoining the hearing.
Okay. Commissioner, yes, we can hear you, Commissioner. Commissioner Showalter, would you like to proceed?
Sure, Chair. Sorry about that. It was strange talking into it. I'm looking like everything looks right, but wasn't happening. But I've logged back in, and I think I'm sure she's walked through the structural balance picture. I assume the inflation point has been made as well. And it's a really simple one. Once again, inflation isn't included in the forecast based upon current law. So revenues do include the nominal growth of activities due to inflation. Projected spending does not. It's about $1 billion impact there. The other thing that from yesterday, I just want to draw out for you, Chair Moran and members, is that question of, you know, how much of this improvement in the forecast is one-time versus ongoing. And a pretty simple way of looking at it is, you see here about $5.6 billion in structural balance in 2022 and 23. That grows somewhat to 24 and 25. But remember that we're looking at about a $9.3 billion projected surplus for 22 and 23. So the remainder of it is essentially one time. So that's, I think, the easiest way. So there's about $4 billion in one time balances and about $5.5 billion in structural. The challenge is, of course, that anything that's spent in this upcoming year will probably double in nature. So, but those are just some of the basic questions we got yesterday. I'm gonna just wrap it up, Chair, and just again, thank everyone for participating in this. And I'm looking forward to the questions because obviously a lot of information, a lot of work goes into these forecasts. These are super unsettled times. And you know, we're gonna be continuing to monitor what's going on in the global economy. We'll be getting updated information from our national forecasters. And we'll be watching closely each of month revenue numbers. And so we'll be sharing that information, obviously, with the committee. So you've got the latest as well. Clearly, we're starting from a point of strength, and that's a great place to work from. And I just want to thank as well you know, the staff at MMB and state agencies who got this information together. Because, you know, ultimately, it's that professionalism, it's that asking the questions that helps us answer the questions that you have today and put together more than 80 pages of detailed information that I really recommend to the committee and staff to look at to understand some of the other factors that are going on right now. But with that, Chair, I'd be happy to take questions.
All right. I want to thank you all for being here, myself, too. And we will open for questions. I think I'm going to open up with the first question because I heard you mentioned the Russian invasion. So my question is around that. Can you talk a little bit more about the impact of the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the associated sanctions and actions that it may have on the forecast?
Yeah, I can turn it over to Dr. Kalamakidis. Laura?
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Kalamakidis.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Madam Chair, members. So there, I can think of this in a couple of different ways. One is direct impacts on Minnesota's economy from the Russian invasion and the sanctions. And there certainly are Minnesota businesses that have important exposure to Russia and Ukraine that are trading partners with Russia and Ukraine. Some of those are involved in agricultural production and agricultural trade, but not all of our agricultural companies are. And then, of course, there are families and communities, the Ukrainian community and churches in Minnesota that are suffering and now as well. So there's that direct impact, and businesses that have direct exposure to Russia and Ukraine are mitigating those risks as we speak, I'm sure. But in aggregate, the state economy doesn't have a lot of exposure to those two countries. Our main trading partners are Canada, Mexico, and China, and neither Russia nor Ukraine make it into the top 10 of our trading partners. It's not to say that it doesn't matter, but it's not, the state as in aggregate doesn't have a lot of exposure there. So that's the direct impact. Then the larger impact, probably even though it's indirect, is on the Minnesota economy through impacts on the U.S. economy. Now, as we said, the U.S. economic outlook that we have used didn't incorporate those because they were unknown at the time. And of course, you know, most of the impacts are unknown even now and will stay unknown for a while because we have impacts and then adjustments to those impacts and then new impacts and reactions by governments. So what are some of the things that are happening to the U.S. economy as we speak? Oil prices are higher. They've been rising through January and February as the threat of the Russian invasion occurred. So, but oil prices are higher right now than what our U.S. economic outlook forecasted for the first quarter of this year. Commodity prices also are higher. The main crop commodity that is produced out of Russia and Ukraine is wheat. Minnesota does produce wheat, and so that's going to have an impact on wheat producers in Minnesota and on food processors in Minnesota that use wheat and sunflower oil as well as inputs. The sanctions, their general stock market volatility, that's occurring as we speak. The market has been volatile since the beginning of the year, but that has an impact. The sanctions are part of that. So removing Russia from the SWIFT transaction system is something that removing an economy that's large from SWIFT, that's something we haven't seen before. So the markets are reacting to that. The sanctions on the central bank sanctions on Russia, that's also something that we haven't seen before. And so there are lots of financial transactions that are being adjusted because of that. Russia's economy is going to suffer tremendously for this. And the European economy is more closely tied to Russia than the US is. And so the European economy is going to see impacts as well. So all of those things are happening and changing day to day, and reactions by governments are changing. And so this is going to be a situation that's in flux for quite a long time.
All right, thank you. We have a few other questions. Why don't we go to Representative Hertas?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is Commissioner Showalter still with us?
He is.
I am.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Showalter, in your very first or second slide, you kind of gave a big synopsis of kind of an overview of where we're at. My question is two-part. When we got the November forecast last year, that was, you know, numbers and data that you were able to assemble for that forecast. Were revenues down in November for the remainder of that month?
Commissioner Sher Walters.
So, Madam Chair, Representative, question is whether the revenues in November of 21 were down?
Correct. That's my question.
That would have shown up in the December revenue update. I think they were up slightly, if I recall correctly. Dr. Kalambakidis will probably be able to help me out. But bottom line is the months since that November forecast, we've continued to come in with some very confusing numbers, but certainly positive numbers, Representative.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Representative Hertas. Dr. Kalambakidis, do you have anything to add to that?
Just to validate it. Yes. The November's revenue report had a positive variance, and we've got a positive variance fiscal year to date, meaning our receipts fiscal year to date are ahead of our November forecast.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Commissioner Showalter, as you're aware, we get these monthly updates. The January update was $833 million over forecast. The February update was another $649 million over forecast. Totaling those up is $1.4 $1.79 billion. And in your beginning presentation, it suggested that we were about $1.2 billion revenue over forecast. So I was wondering what happened to a couple hundred million dollars.
Commissioner Showalter.
Chair Moran, Representative, excellent question. The narrative that goes with those revenue updates was really important. As we mentioned, and I'm going to turn it over to our state economist to walk through it because she's much better versed in it than I am. But the short version is there were tax changes that were occurring. And so the timing of payments yielded much higher revenues for the state in those months. But we still anticipate the total tax liability to be relatively close to original estimates. And so what we're anticipating is that there's going to be lower payments throughout the rest of this calendar year. As a result, while you're absolutely right, Representative, that those numbers were significant and high, we weren't seeing those as actual increases to our anticipated tax revenues.
Representative Hertosh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Commissioner Showalter, thank you. I thought there would be a reasonable explanation, but I was hoping that a couple hundred million dollars didn't find its way out of the Treasury.
Chair, Representative, no, far from it. In fact, it's the PTE effect, and there's a significant discussion of it in this forecast, and I think our state economists and our team done a wonderful job of trying to standardize the information so you can follow how those changes occur and how they're rippling through the forecast.
Representative Hertosh?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's it.
Okay, thank you. Representative Pulaski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, on the one of the first slides, you characterized this new amount of money as one-time money. Can you review for all of us the $7.7 billion? Was that ongoing or one-time? And then put it all together. How much of all of this is ongoing in one time?
Commissioner Showalter.
Chair Moran, Representative, thanks for the question. As I mentioned in that last number slide where we talked about the structural balance in 22 and 23 and 24 and 25, that we continue to have a roughly $5 to $6 billion structural surplus in each of those two biennium. The improvement in the structural balance in the tails in 24 and 25 is improved in this forecast, but only by a couple hundred million dollars. So, Representative, to your question, why I characterize most of this forecast improvement as being one time is because it shows up in its improvement in 22 and 23, and there's not a similar improvement going out into the next 2 year period.
So, Commissioner Showalter, can you share with us how much is the one time and how much is the ongoing dollar amount?
Yeah, Chair Moran, by my reckoning, it's a little over $4 billion in one time, about 4.1. And then obviously the structural numbers are on that last slide.
Madam Chair.
Representative Pulaski.
Madam Chair, the difference between one time and ongoing is significant, particularly when we're dealing with bills that could be permanently alterations in taxes coming in, revenue coming into the state. I would like a little more clarification at some point. Exactly how much of this 9.2 is exactly one time and how much of it is ongoing? You don't need to do it today, Commissioner, but as we proceed with some fairly large bills, one we pass Thursday off the House floor, I would like to have a very tight list of how much is one time and how much is ongoing, Madam Chair.
Yes, I agree, Representative Pulaski. Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a question I'm not sure who can answer it, but if I remember right, and if I'm wrong, please let me know, that there's a fair amount of dollars left over from the American Rescue Plan that I think is still floating around there. And so has that been included in this budget forecast? And if so, where can we find that?
Is that a question for the commissioner?
Yeah, sure.
Yes, okay.
And I can start it. Our state budget director knows these accounts way better than I do, but I'll take the first pass at it. And if you want to get into it further, we're happy to do so. Chair Representative, the forecast really focuses on the general fund. And I should have said that in my opening comments. What we're really focusing on is the general fund, where our general purpose taxes and much of our spending happens, but it doesn't include all of our spending. Obviously, as you well know, there's the legacy fund, there's the trunk highway fund, there's the healthcare access fund, there's a lot of different funds that aren't reflected in this accounting. Those are all reported separately, and that information is available on our website. Federal funds are a similar kind of issue. So federal funds are outside of the general fund by and large, and certainly the ARP funds are outside. So there's about more than $1.14 billion that are remain unallocated and unappropriated at this point in time, and those are not included in this forecast.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. That's kind of what I thought, that there was some of those dollars. And just a quick question. Do you know, is there a time limit that that has to be spent, or is that just into a particular fund and it's for infinitum until it gets spent out?
Commissioner Showalters.
Chair, it certainly is time limited, but I'm not sure I know the specifics of that. If the State Budget Director can help me out, that'd be great.
So that would be, is that Dr. Columbus-Petis or Director Mingy?
Director Mingy.
Director Mingy?
Madam Chair, the funds for the state and local fiscal recovery funds must be obligated by December 31st of 2024 and expended by December 31st of 2026.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And I think we'll get into that probably at a later date sometime, but thank you for that clarification. I appreciate that.
All right. Thank you. So do we have any other questions? I do not see any hands up. Okay, well, seeing no further discussion, I want to thank the NMB team for joining us today and sharing the information. I'm sure we are all very versed at how we're going to move forward now, or maybe not. So, remember, with that, that will conclude our business for the day. Please watch the emails for our next meeting. Schedule is pending. With that, I just want to say thank you to all for joining us this late afternoon, and this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.